Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the town hall meeting for the Florida Council of the Blind State Convention. As usual, our town hall meeting consists of our Director of Division of Blind Services. And, you know, he's been delightful to work with since he started. So we are so honored today that Director Doyle is in person, and you will get to meet the new bureau chief for the Florida Talking Book Braille Library in Daytona, Nicole Sanders. So I am going to mute while my doctor looks at my hip, and I'm going to listen. So Director Doyle, thank you so much for being there.
All right. Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is Robert Doyle, Director at the Division of Blind Services. And Sheila, again, we've talked a little bit earlier. So sorry that we're not able to greet you in person, but you're certainly in our prayers. It is good to be here myself. I know the last time that I was expecting to gather with you all, I had a situation with my sister who had taken an X-ray. Actually, when around the time we interviewed Nicole, who you'll get a chance to meet in just a little bit, who's our new bureau chief over library services. But it is good. It seems like we got a full crowd, and they're bringing extra chairs in the room to make room for others that are coming in. And when we came in initially, I was thinking, maybe folks aren't come to the convention. People are here, or they were going to have an extended lunch. But it's good to see so many friends here today, and I'm going to give some updates. I'm going to leave some room for some questions, and then also we're going to give Nicole about 20 minutes or so for updates from the library as well. So I was just trying to remember what time this session is scheduled to end, 2:45, so that we can make sure we stop what we need to do, what we need to. We are still waiting on the governor to sign the budget. I'm not sure whether or not it's been advanced to the governor as of yet, but we're waiting on the governor's budget to receive the budget, and then to review, to look at where he's going to make his budget cuts, and then also to sign off of the budget. So we're waiting on that to occur at this time. We did see some good things in this year's budget for our agency and for our team at the division. You all know that salaries have been a real big challenge for the state employees. We know that the challenge that state as a whole, where salaries haven't been there, but the governor did recommend in his budget an across the board 5% increase for state employees. And that was approved by the legislature. And so we anticipate that it's gonna be signed by the governor because it was part of his initial legislative budget request. So we're really excited about that and what that's gonna do for our employees at the division. I'm gonna do a little side note as I talk a little bit more about some other things relating to the budget and employees. But it really is a good time to be looking for state employment if you're looking for work. And so the division has a number of vacancies available. The department, the state, has quite a few vacancies across the state of Florida. When I think about the division as a whole, we've got positions in the state office and our communications area. We've got folks in our contracts team, but to work together as a part of a team and with those skills, we do have vacancies at the agency, and we are looking to fill those vacancies. Our vacancy rate remains high across the agency, although we are starting to see applicants starting to come in with a little bit more regularity. As I was talking to Ed James, who's our district administrator here in the Orlando area, who is actually here today with one of our new counselors, he's getting positions filled. I think he said he's seven counselors. He'll have seven counselors in August, five rehabilitation technicians that he's getting close or going to be at pretty soon. And so we're starting to see these positions getting filled. So not just Tallahassee, but across the state. But again, this is a good time if you're looking for work. And then from the state perspective as well, you know, last year, the legislature and the governor together raised the minimum wage for state employees to $15 an hour. That's the minimum. Now, the rest of the state, like when you talk about going to some of the other jobs, the rest of the state is still, I think, at $11 an hour. So the state of Florida's minimum wage for employees is higher than in terms of what the legislature and the governor have approved is still higher than what is in the general market in Florida, although the general market in Florida will continue to see increases up to $15 an hour, I believe, by the year 2026. Somebody looking to come in, 15 is the baseline. And then we're going to be seeing that 5% increase for state employees after the governor has reviewed and approved the budget. And that will be effective for individuals who are on the state payroll as of June 30th. So a couple other updates. So we've talked about as a division, and again, another reason why I talked about working for the division, a good time to come. We have also gone to the legislature. We've been trying this for years and years and years, but we all know that those salary increases did not go far enough. And this year, with the support that we received through the commissioner's office, including Senior Chancellor Henry Mack, who worked very tenaciously with the legislature and the commissioner's office, and Corey Dowd in the commissioner's office worked very tenaciously with the legislature. We did, in addition to the 5% across the board increases, we were able to see in our budget additional funds allocated so that the Division of Blind Services could increase the salaries of our field-based staff members. And again, this means that on the last time we were looking at our counselors and we were not able to extend those increases like to the rehab center, for example. Well, there are funds in this budget, again, still pending governor's approval. There are funds in this budget that provides the 5% across the board and as well gives us an opportunity to provide additional increases to our team members. Now, again, the primary focus of those increases is folks in the field. Although we have been short staffed, our team members continue to work together collaboratively across the agency. We have seen levels of employment over these last number of years that have exceeded where we've ever been in terms of any records of employment. And we're looking forward to those same type of numbers as we close out this year as well. So we're really super excited, but our team members have worked together really well in order to help us to accomplish those goals. But there comes a time where people get burned out. And so that's why it's important that we get new individuals on our teams, both in our field offices as well as in the state office. But we're really excited about what's happening there. I mentioned us helping more individuals get jobs over the last few years. Well, over all the years except for the blip we had the first year of COVID and the next year after that, where we're just too short of the previous number. But I will also say that we are during that time, while we have helped more folks to actually get jobs, we have served fewer people in some instances. So you know what I'm saying? So that means that the people that we have been serving, we've had a higher percentage of those individuals who've gotten jobs in the past, but we have served fewer clients as an organization. And so we are working with a group called More Communications. And again, I know that some of the members of our Rehabilitation Council are aware of this already. We're working with a group called More Communications and actually have created a marketing, or not marketing, an outreach campaign designed to help increase awareness of our employment services through the division. And so I'm hoping that maybe some of you all have encountered some of this online marketing through the division. It went live about a week or two ago where they're doing the online marketing to individuals to be able to learn about the services available through the Division of Blind Services. Has anybody run into any of the or seen any of the online marketing at all? So I'm getting no shakes. So hopefully some of those will start popping up. But the thing is we want to serve more people. We want to reach more people, let them know about the services that are available through the Division of Blind Services. It's not a big secret, but last year the division had to turn back $8 million to the federal government. So it sounds like it's a secret to some of you all. So this has been a large topic of discussion for the division with our Rehabilitation Council. It's been a large subject of discussion on the federal level, because not just have the Division of Blind Services, last year we gave back $8 million, but about a half a billion dollars have been turned back from vocational rehabilitation agencies in the last year. A lot of money. So, and there's a lot of reasons why that is the case. Now, we don't like to give money back, right? We want to spend the money that we have. And some of the challenges relating to spending money, one, COVID was a challenge. As I mentioned, we were serving fewer individuals. Two, we were providing less services when you think about transportation services. We had a high rate of vacancies that I've talked about as well. And there were just some service categories that we haven't been serving as well. But also a number of years ago, the federal government put in place automatic increases to our vocational rehabilitation grant. And so those automatic increases have been kicking in every year. Now, one of the challenges is that the state has to match those dollars, but as those federal dollars have been going up every year, we have not had a match to go with those dollars, right? So that kind of gets part of the process of trying to match the dollars. So I'm trying to match the dollars in order to spend all the dollars. And so some of the things that we're looking at is how can we increase the match that we have available? And then also, how can we spend more of the dollars that we do that we have within our control to spend right now? Now, my budget chief is saying, you know, hey, we're looking for strategies. And actually, the feds are going to be coming to Florida in July. And they're going to be doing a program monitoring of our employment program. They're going to be looking at two primary areas when they come in and do monitoring. One, they're going to look at our fiscal aspects. How are we spending money? Are we following the regulations concerning what they call period of performance? Are we using every strategy at our disposal to spend the dollars that we have? And we anticipate that through that process, they're going to identify some areas that we can do better at. We absolutely know that already as before they even get here. So we're preparing for that. But the other thing they're going to look at is program performance. And that's an area that we think we're going to do pretty well at, because we have done so well in terms of serving our clients. It's just a fiscal area and trying to strengthen what we're doing on that side. But we have dollars to spend as an organization. We are looking at strategies. And one of the things that the federal government is going to look at and expect from us after this monitoring is they're going to expect from us to put strategies in place in order to spend more dollars. And some of those strategies will include, like one of the things that we've been talking about for a little while, and I did send an email out a little bit earlier just to confirm and to see where we are in that process. I don't know if Ed James might be able to answer the question for me. But one of the things is that we've been looking at is increasing the stipend that we pay to students who are engaging in work-based learning experiences. We've talked about that a number of times. We were paying a stipend that was below a wage or minimum wage or anything to that nature. And we've talked to the Rehab Services Administration, that's who we get our dollars from. And we've talked to the technical assistance centers. And we believe, we know that we can raise that dollar amount. So we certainly wanna make sure that we've increased, if we have not already, that we do increase the amount that we're paying for these work-based learning experiences so these students have an opportunity to engage in these experiences and then also to be able to offset their expenditures for that engagement. We anticipate we're going to spend more money on salaries, because part of what we've asked for the legislature is we've asked for actual cash dollars for those salaries that require state dollars, actual general revenue dollars, but also utilizing existing funds we have available on the federal side that we have not been able to utilize because of vacancies or because of not having the approvals that we just received through the legislative process. And so we anticipate seeing increases in salaries. That's gonna be another expenditure that we're gonna look at. But we also wanna see more expenditures in our client service categories. And so, you know, some of the things that we've been looking at, I know we've talked about a number of times is, you know, how do we loosen some of our policies as an organization so that we're able to make sure more people are able to access services. Some folks may be working part-time and can't afford time-wise, and they have a family to go to school full-time. And because individuals are able to advance in employment, we wanna make sure that we are able to utilize more of our dollars so that people who wanna go to college part-time are also able to go to college part-time. And so that's one of those policy areas that we are looking at. Not that we wanna stretch out a rehabilitation so far that it takes somebody 5 years or 8 years in order to reach a successful outcome. However, we do wanna make sure that we're able to expand access to services to more individuals. And I think that's one of the policy areas. When we were speaking with folks with the Rehab Services Administration, I'm set the mic up on the podium so I don't have to hold it. You know, one of the things that they challenged state agencies to look at is they told state agencies, they said, hey, you know, look at your policies from an area where you're not necessarily weeding clients out of the process. And so one of the state agencies talked about how when RSA came in and started looking at their policies, you know, they said that everything was like, no, 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 you know, stop, no, don't, you know. And so they were challenged to go back and rewrite their policies in a way that encouraged participation and encouraged more clients to be able to access services. And that's something that we're looking at within our policies as well. So we expect that some of these policies and things are going to be updated for rules and are all probably in our August as well as in our October State Board of Education meetings. And so folks probably can anticipate a notice of rulemaking from the division in a very short order relating to some of the things we're working on. But we anticipate we're going to continue to work on updating rules, updating policies, updating procedures so that we're increasing access to services as an organization for our clients, but also still trying to be mindful so that we don't find ourselves in a short period of time in order of selection. And what order of selection means is you don't have enough money. And because you don't have enough money, now you've got to begin to select who actually gets services. So we're trying to balance that process. So those are some of the things that we're working on over at the agency. Yes, sir.
Sorry about that. Here you go.
All right. And folks who that we know it's a little cramped in here, but the air walls have been open. And so they are to your right. The walls have opened so you can spread out a little bit if you want to spread out.
Divisions are under the Department of Education and what we're, you know, all departments. I know there's BBE, there's DOE, and there's, you know, XYZ and all this. So that's under all this. So could you maybe run that down so sure. We have a better understanding of it?
Absolutely, yeah, we'll do that. And so let me clarify, you want so the Division of Blind Services is a division within the Department of Education. And within the Department of Education, you've got a lot of different divisions there. You've got career and adult education. That's where folks who want to get certificates and apprenticeships and those kind of programs, working with schools for industry certifications. There's a division of the Florida College System. There's a division for vocational rehabilitation. That's other than the Division of Blind Services. They serve individuals with disabilities and get jobs on that side. I'm going to get to DBS as well. There is the K-12 system, the Division of Public Schools, and within there's a couple of other divisions within them as well. There's the Office of Safe Schools. There's the Office of Independent Education. I remember back in the day, they used to have a place called like DeVry and stuff like that. You know, those independent education entities, there's an office that that deals with individuals who are looking to go to like charter schools. I'm trying to remember the exact name of that division within the department, but you've got that. You've got an area that deals with information technology that does with assessments. There is a Florida Education Foundation, which is similar to our blind services organization. And I'm trying to just going around the table. It's an Inspector General's office. I think that's the majority of it. So that's DOE and DBS.
Director Doyle, I'm going to.
Yes.
I'm going to ask that you go ahead and finish your presentation, and then we'll take questions for you and Nicole after she's done, if that's okay.
Understanding that as a division, we provide services from individuals from birth to the end of life, right? And so you've got a children's program, a blind babies program. You have the business enterprise program. There's a Braille and Talking Book Library. You're going to hear from Nicole Sanders, who's our new bureau chief here in just a few moments. We have the Rehabilitation Center, which we're really, really close to rebranding, I hope. We're sending the paperwork through and actually got a call about it on Friday, rebranding it as a Career Technology and Training Center for the Blind, which is in Daytona Beach. Let's see here. And so Business Enterprise, and then we've got our budget folks as well, and then our communications folks and the deputy director. Those are your head areas, your primary, and our IT folks as well. And so again, we serve folks across the agency, across the state, from birth to old age. And again, we are, as we think about the monitoring that's coming in, the federal government is coming in to look primarily at our employment programs, our vocational rehabilitation program. Some of that could look a little bit at Business Enterprise because that is an employment component. Some of it could well into looking at the residential center because that also is an employment arena. But what we've seen so far from the federal government has been primarily in the core a focus of getting people jobs and also those fiscal arenas. RSA is very interested in making sure that states are spending the dollars that we get. And I know our district administrators, actually, that's one of the things that they have on their expectations. And other things in the governor's budget were relating to the library. And so we got...
Am I going to be stealing time from you if I talk about the...
Okay, so there is money for the library shelving. And I know that's something that we talked about, something we were very fortunate to get in the budget. Nicole may talk a little bit more about that in just a little bit of time. And then also something for people, this is a retention challenge, is people are probably familiar with something called drop. It's where people can like retire but still work 5 more years and bank money. And typically when you get to the end of that 5 years, you gotta go. Well, the legislature extended that drop to 8 years now for general employees. So now that means that people can stay longer, which should help us with some of the staffing challenges that we have. We are preparing right now, and as a matter of fact, on Monday, we have to get to the commissioner's office our thoughts and ideas about what we'd like to see for the next legislative session. Now, the next legislative session actually starts in January. It usually starts in March, but it starts early in election years. And so it starts in January. So that means that just probably a couple of months, a few months, they're gonna start coming in for committee hearings. They're gonna start having bills moving forward already in just a few months. And so we've got to, even though we don't have an officially signed budget for this year, we're already looking at, hey, what do we need money for next year? And a couple of things that we're thinking about right now and we're working on right now, I'll let Nicole talk about maybe what they're going to look at from the library, but some upgrades to the rehab center, some roofing upgrades and some other campus related updates. From a program standpoint, we're looking and thinking about asking for some dollars. I think somebody mentioned adjustment to blindness a little bit earlier, where we can provide funds to the lighthouses so that they can have a dedicated person to provide adjustment to blindness support. Now we know that that kind of fits. And that includes the rehab center as well, Cassandra, because I know that was one of the discussions in terms of needing to expand our adjustment to blindness services at the rehab center as well. And so adjustment to blindness, we have, we are at the very tail end of a rate study. So a rate study is where you kind of reach out to an entity. Generally, you're reaching out to an external entity and you say, hey, evaluate what we pay our providers for services and tell us, are we paying enough or we're paying too much or we're paying too little or if we're paying the right ways. And so after some extensive work, we have some numbers. Now, we've talked about, and I actually just got a draft of the updated report from the entity that performed the rate study. Just got that in my inbox last night. There are caveats and there are limitations to those numbers. However, we have some numbers, and he's gonna, and I haven't read it yet, but he's identified in that report what some of those caveats and some of those limitations are. But as you look at the program across a whole, there's numbers that we have for each program, independent living and older blind and babies and children and all of those programs. And some of the caveats and limitations, let me mention for just a moment. In some instances, the division may go to a community rehab program provider and will say, hey, we want you to provide, let's say, a transition or youth-based program. And that provider may provide that program, but they may also have their local. Those programs may directly align to what the division's asking for payment. And sometimes the program may have a few different things that are embedded in it. Or the Lighthouse may say, okay, well, this client needs something. We're going to pay for this item where either the division didn't have the money to pay for it or they didn't come to the division to ask to pay for it. So when we looked at the numbers, we said, okay, there are some components of these numbers that we don't know that they directly align with what we may be asking them to do. And so for that reason, we don't know that we should be looking at that total dollar amount and saying, this is how much DBS should be paying for the service. And so we've been having some discussions. And by the way, for our council members that are here and those who are aware, we have been having some good conversations lately with the executive director, CEO of the Florida Agency Serving the Blind. We've been having some positive communication, some positive collaboration as well. And so we have been having some discussions, and what we're looking at is targeting a percentage to request from the legislature in this next session additional dollars to provide services. And I'll give you one example for older blind services. The Lighthouses have indicated, at least those that were contributed to the individual program data, they have indicated that it cost them on average about $3,500 to serve an older individual who was blind. The division currently pays, I believe it's $2,100 for serving an older individual who's blind. And so obviously there's a gap. And so this is based on these numbers. Now, remember, there's some caveats in there because does these numbers represent exactly what we asked to be done and all of those things? Either way, we recognize that there is a deficit from what the division pays and what the Lighthouses are what's costing them for services. And somewhere over the course of the next, I believe, 3 weeks or so, the department will begin to solidify its request. And that request, there's discussion internally with the department, there's discussion with the governor's office, and then ultimately those requests go up before the State Board of Education, and then may work themselves into the governor's recommended budget and then into a legislative request. And I know hopefully it's not too much detail as we discuss those things. But what I'm saying is that we're working on budget requests for next year. The things that we have in mind are really focused on client services, making sure that we can get more funds in the community for the delivery of those services. We're looking at the rate increases for those CRPs. And then one of the other challenges that we're trying to get, and unfortunately, I don't know that we're going to have it from our community rehab providers. I know I gave another acronym. That's our Lighthouses, our CRPs. We had had some discussions about credentials. So as a division, we want to make sure that the people who are providing services are credentialed, that these are certified orientation mobility specialists, vision rehabilitation therapists. The challenge is there is a shortage of credentialed people. There's a shortage. And as much as we want to make sure that we've got them, and the Lighthouses want to make sure that they've got them, there's not a lot of folks to go around. And so we recognize that we got to do something. And so we were looking for some information from the Lighthouses about some programs they looked at so that we can put it into a legislative budget request. That information we're still waiting on, still working on it. But if the Lighthouses, if they're able to get that information, they may pursue that separately. We certainly understand the need for it, and as the department and allows, we will support that as the opportunity is given as it works through. But we are looking at what we might be able to do to improve the qualified staffing And so we're working on reconvening our credentials review committee that will sometimes review and give authorization for somebody. Let's say they've been working in this area for a long time. Maybe they don't have the credential, but they've been working under somebody for a while, or utilizing in a short term occupational therapist to assist with the delivery of those services. A couple of things we're working on, and I'm trying to get out of the way. Our rehab center, which at some point hopefully will be formally known as Rehab Center, Career Technology and Training Center for the Blind, our CT, somebody's they've already acronymed them, CTTC. We've talked about the last few times trying to get some programs off the ground there. Some of you all know training program that trains folks on how to do hardware and software, how to do information security. And jobs in the CompTIA field are very well paid. Again, it's an internationally recognized program. It took us a couple of years to get an instructor because of the things that were happening with COVID. But I hope that's not my time. We have it off the ground, and we've actually, I believe, we're in our second or third cohort of clients going through that program and learning. So you've got simultaneous cohorts. You get one started, and then when they get partway through, then we brought another cohort in. Really excited about what that's going to do for our clients. We're also, I mentioned we have been working on an apprenticeship for web accessibility. Well, we got full approval for web accessibility apprenticeship that's going to be housed at our rehabilitation center, our Career Technology and Training Center in Daytona Beach. And we're in the process now of reviewing applicants to participate in that program. Again, that's a great thing because we're taking in DBS clients. We're getting them credentials on how to make sure and study websites for their accessibility for other clients. And then the goal is that these individuals, they will be DBS employees. But then what we want to do is we want to help those individuals get out and work for other companies, so that they can go work for them to help them ensure that their websites are accessible as well. Really excited about that. We have a little bit of holdup where we've been working on a call center training program, just a little bit of holdup. Part of it was staff transitions. Trying to work with one of our lighthouses who has a pretty successful call center training program so that we can have a residential call center training program in Daytona Beach at the center. We are part of, again, the Florida Division of Blind Services is one small part of the overall workforce system. And again, not all of our programs are workforce related, as you know, but we're one small part of the workforce system. The legislature passed a few years ago something called the REACH Act. I think we talked about it before. The REACH Act requires the agencies and entities to work together. And so we've been working together on some ways to make sure that clients have a seamless access to services. And so the idea here is you go back to the old no wrong door approach. And so we've been working with the Department of Economic Opportunity, which is now gonna be actually named the Department of Commerce, the Department of Economic Opportunity. We've been working with them. We've been working with CareerSource Florida. We've been working with the governor's office, governor's reach office. We've been working with the career and technology folks, just a variety in the Department of Children and Family Services. And there is a plan that sometime, now again, it's gonna be a few years to get completely off the ground, but at some point when an individual goes looking for a job in Florida, they're going to encounter what's called Florida Wins. It'll be a website where people will go to that they'll be able to apply for services. And if they come and apply for services through this portal, right, it will give an opportunity for their application to go to DCF, DEO, DVR, so that individuals, if they're getting services from multiple agencies within the state, they don't have to go and put all their information in all over again. And so it's going to help us as we communicate, collaborate with other entities. And so we spent a couple of days this week working with EY, Ernst & Young, on trying to develop this process and what it looks like. We're really, really excited about what we're going to see once this system is up and going. Now, DBS is one of the few folks who have an easy and seamless online application process. We're going to be looking at how that works in play with this other system once it comes on board. But we're really excited about the opportunities that it gives us for collaborating. I'm going to stop. I can certainly talk about a whole lot of other things. I want to make sure I give time for Nicole. I maybe want to make sure I can give a few minutes for any questions and answers as well. I know Nicole, she says she needs about 20 minutes, so I think we got 35 minutes. I see two hands. Patricia Leposky's got her hand up in the back for microphone, and then I also see Director McCoy also had his hand up as well. Get a mic runner.
All right. Well, first of all, we appreciate the fact that you're willing to come every year and talk to us and give us an update. But I'll tell you what I'm personally interested in is what's happening to blind people. How many jobs are they getting? Are they increasing, or is there a bigger problem? And what about blind children? What are you dealing with in terms of numbers? And are they getting better service than they did 10 years ago? And older people, I'm told by the public library that only 25% of people over 60. To help those people get the same information that they would otherwise get or learn to use those computers.
Thank you. And Director McCoy, I don't know how many folks know that Carl was Director of Blind Services some years ago. And we thank him for his service. I understand he just relocated to Daytona Beach, has retired a second time after his 95th birthday. So thank you for that question. So in terms of numbers, we're going to have our final numbers on June 30th, or that's when our state year closes. But in terms of employment, absolutely. Every year we have seen these increases in employment outcomes. More people have gotten jobs, except for, again, during the COVID period where we had a slight dip a couple of times, we've seen more folks get employment outcomes. In terms of, you know, what are we doing for the older blind community? What are we doing for the older blind population? We've talked about increases in budget in terms of the rate increases. We've also spent pretty much every dollar we've gotten through Social Security reimbursement over the last number of years, we've put it towards older blind services. And then also we have received funds from the Blind Services Foundation to provide equipment and to provide training to older blind individuals as well. And so we're really excited about what those programs are doing to put more access and more services, more equipment and resources to older individuals who are blind. We know that Florida is a place where a lot of folks who come to retire. We know that the number of folks who are blind in this state is higher than many other states. And we remain committed to serving those individuals and making sure that they have the resources that they need. Now I will say this. You know, we serve those who come to our doors for services. We have probably a little bandwidth to serve additional individuals in those categories. We're going to need a whole lot more money from the legislature to do that. But we've got to see the more people getting asking for services before we can go and access those funds. Patricia? She said her question was along the same lines. Okay.
Same as calls.
All right, I think, is it Mr. Shane? He said he had a question as well. And then the gentleman in the front.
Yeah, my other question, Mr. Doyle, Shannon Chelton, Tallahassee, was what are we doing for recruitment? Said earlier, some online ads. How about we just open the PSAs? Because I know BBE, I'm in the BBE program. We're lacking 20 or 30 folks.
The great question. So this year, for the first time, we've actually put a good chunk of funds into outreach. As I mentioned earlier, we're working with more communication. There's a direct mail. There's some online. There's going to be some PSAs tied to that. We actually had somebody record a script for us. And so the Business Enterprise Program has been working on updating with more communications, have been working on updating their materials. And we're talking about a video and things as well, so that we can reach out to businesses, say, hey, hey, host us for some vending machines and those kind of things, but also so that we can recruit more individuals into the business enterprise program. So absolutely, we're working on those things. And if you want more information, I know you're in Tallahassee, I'd be happy to give you more details or share it with you at that point. Yes, sir, up front. This gentleman, I'm having trouble. Name is failing me right now. I apologize.
Okay, my name's Tom Loveday, and I have a safety question. I noticed that young people have no idea what a cane or a guide dog means. So is anyone working with the Department of Motor Vehicles so that it's being trained in driver's ed, or there are questions on the license test or anything like that?
So I can't say from a state office level. I know we work a lot with the Department of Transportation in regards to like white cane awareness. We partner with them every year around that time of the year relating to white cane awareness. There's probably some more local collaboration that I can't speak of, but I can probably say with a surety there's more that we can do than just on October 15th relating to white cane awareness. I know there's more we can do than in those times. And so I'm hoping I'm addressing your question on that.
I really feel that it should be at least on the TED test.
About what
do you
about the white cane?
Somebody with pain, you know?
Yeah. I believe there is something on the test. I see a couple of hands up front. They may have an answer to that. Two seats to your left. Yeah, you said there are required to be questions on the exam. Yes, ma'am.
I'm from the Manatee County Council Blind. My name is Kathy Rushwin. We have a program that we go every semester to the driver's ed classes when they have their initial orientation, and we have a presentation about the white cane law, white cane awareness. We share our experiences with traffic and, you know, bring a dog, guide dog in with the handler and let them ask questions. And we've been doing that for about two years now.
Good.
So we just felt, you know, a continuing relationship with the driver's education teachers. They look forward to us coming, and the kids seem to get something out of it.
No. Thank you for that, because as I mentioned, I couldn't speak to local, but I appreciate you're doing that it's taking place in the local areas. Oh, I see a hand all the way in the back.
I tried to get some training with Lighthouse and DBS for cane travel, because I've been a guide dog user for many, many years, and my dog now is retired and can't work. And so I was very, very disappointed, because when I tried to get services, they turned me down because my letter of visual impairment, whatever it is, legal blindness, was over a year old. And so I needed that training before I came here, because I'm not a good cane traveler, and I couldn't get it. And they said, go see an ophthalmologist. And I tried three times, and the ophthalmologists don't want to see you because you're already blind. You've been blind for 40 years. And what are they going to do with you? And I'm like, well, I need a legal blindness letter. And they're like, oh, well, we're not going to have you come in just for that. So it's a vicious circle. It's been a problem. And I don't even understand, if you have a disease that's not going to go away, why that's even an issue.
I agree with you. And I'm sorry that happened. I really am sorry that happened. A few years ago, we updated our policies to indicate that individuals can use existing information that we may have with the client from a prior case in order to reopen their case. And maybe something got lost in that process. But I apologize that happened. If you're still wanting those services, and we're certainly still wanting to make those available to you. Ed James, who's our local district administrator, he's walking to you now. We want to be able to give our counselors the authority to be able to make that type of determination without having to go to a doctor. Now, there's some cases, you know, you're going to need a doctor, depending on the level of vision. But if somebody's totally blind, right, it doesn't make sense. And so we actually got a little pushback from RSA on that. But that's one of the areas that we are, and again, RSA is the people who fund our employment program. That's one of the areas that we're trying and hoping that we can educate those in legislative arenas to recognize that you shouldn't have to force somebody, again, who's totally blind or whose vision at a certain point, to have to go and jump through those type of loops, or at least there's a longer shelf life on those prior tests so that we're able to expedite your services. Ed, did you have anything you want to add to that? Again, Ed James is our district administrator in the Orlando office. And you can have my mic if you want.
Just a second. And just to add to, as far as eligibility for the program and for services, we do have the ability, we visually could see what the disability is, I don't need any other medical documentation to move them forward to services. So you're exactly right. For a person who's totally blind, I don't need to go to another eye doctor to be able to get that application moving. I've connected with her. We're going to solve that problem.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much.
All right. Any questions on Zoom?
No hands on Zoom.
My name is Robert Ferran. I have two questions. We have a problem, which I'm going to face as soon as I go back this week, with POs. When the PO is late, they don't want to give us a class. And technology changes so quickly. Can we get more time in class so that we can be able to at least stay up at the same rate as the technology?
So I'm trying to understand the question. You said a PO, the purchase
if they
order?
Don't come, if it's not there, they don't want to give me a class.
Tell me what a class at Cassandra has.
The pay order.
So what you're asking is if your counselor gives you a PO for class so that you can go learn technology, they only give you three weeks. And if you need longer, then they stop you at 3 weeks. Is that your question to Director Doyle?
No, my question is the pay order that is, I hope is there when I go back, so that I can take my classes this week. Sometimes they say, oh, the pay order hasn't come yet.
Oh, okay. I got you.
So that causes a problem or a friction between me and the counselor.
Okay, got you. So your paperwork, you beat the paperwork there most of the time.
See, I've been doing this for a couple of years, so I can't understand why is the pay order not on time.
Yeah, that's
it's not something that's new every month. It's the same thing.
I understand the question, and I know it is a challenge with all of the different purchase orders and things and the order they go in the system and all of those things. I was listening to something another state is doing where they've actually taken, again, I don't know what it would take for us to do this, but they've taken a process where they've created like a debit card. And if you need something, it's on that debit card, and they can authorize it on the debit card and send it directly to that card. And you pay, and it's not going to let you go to Best Buy with it. It'll be for whatever category, whatever service. I think it's something that we want to explore to see how we can expedite our payments. I know one of the things that we try to do is make sure we definitely have vendors in My Florida Marketplace, and trying to, if we have that direct channel with the vendor, then that should help expedite it as well. I'm not sure what your specific situation is, but if you want, let's make sure that we get your information so that I can send an email to the state office to follow up, because if you've got a class this coming week, we want to make sure that you're able to, if we can, to get you into it.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. I know that my time is up. There was another gentleman in the corner. I can come and see you, or he's going to bring you a mic.
Yeah, my name's Richard Draper, and I'm the board of directors at the Lighthouse for Manatee and Sarasota County and three other counties. And my question to you is, like, we have to maintain talent, and an O&M instructor or an AI instructor is usually actually a master's degree involved in that. And the money that we get reimbursed does not adequately cover our expenses to provide that kind of training and to maintain and keep that kind of talent. I was just wondering if there's a way, excuse me, you should maybe try to address that.
Yes. So we just concluded or are concluding a rate study, and we're going to go to the legislature and ask the legislature if they can provide additional funds so that we can increase the rate.
Yeah. At one time we had a, or you had a client advocate there. If people disagreed with the counselor or something of that kind, they had somebody they could go to mediate the issue. Do you still have a?
We certainly do. We have Ms. Sila Miller, who is our client resolution specialist. And so if folks are having a challenge, you can work with your counselor. You can reach Sila Miller in the state office. You can call Disability Rights Florida. There are many different avenues. But in DBS, Sila Miller, and I think folks here are familiar with Sila.
Okay. Do you publicize that, though? Because, you know, people out there, unless somebody tells them, they don't know what that's available.
Yes, that's something that's communicated to individuals when they first apply for services, and when they're working through the service process, they're made aware of their processes of who to contact and how to contact. I'm going to stop here because I know I want to give some time to Ms. Nicole Sanders. Nicole is our new bureau chief at our Braille and Talking Book Library. Nicole came back to Florida from Texas, and she is a bona fide librarian. We're really excited to have her on board. She waded through all the processes of getting the paperwork and even recovered very well when there was a little snafu along the way. So we're glad to have her on the team. Nicole, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Director Doyle. It's great to be here with you today. As Director Doyle said, I'm a native Floridian. I did go away for 20 years to Texas. That was not the plan when I left. It was only supposed to be for a couple of years. However, as life would take its turns, we stayed 20 years. We went for my husband's job with Department of Homeland Security. And until he retired, we did not move back home. So we are back. We are thrilled to be here. One of our sons has come back with us, which has thrilled me. And I found this opportunity, and I think it's a wonderful opportunity. I'm thrilled to be in the position. I have been here about 2.5 months now as the Bureau Chief. So I'm still learning a lot, but I work with a wonderful staff that's very supportive and is teaching me new things every day. I have quite a few updates for you, so I'm gonna run through them kind of quickly, but maybe we'll have time for questions at the end. I just wanna honor your time. The summer reading program is kicking off this month, June 26th, and will run through August 11th. We are partnering with the National Library Service for this summer reading program, and they are going to be offering books, activities focused on kindness, friendship, and unity. They're also offering a lot of Zoom opportunities. They're going to have authors come on and speak. They're going to have read alouds for children and younger readers. The kickoff is at 4 p.m. on June 26th, and the Librarian of Congress, Dr. Carla Hayden, will kick that off. You will be getting postcards from the library coming out soon with links and information so that you have everything you need for the summer program. National Library Service has told us that will probably be the end of this year. That's what we're all crossing our fingers for. However, it could be next year. The companies that make the e-readers, there's two different companies that NLS has partnered with, Humanware and Zoomax, and they unfortunately have to wait on the electronic chips that come from overseas. So, like everything. So they're waiting on those. And as they get those in, they are creating the e-readers and sending them out. NLS has let us know they will not send them to us until they have them in their entirety and in one brand specifically. So even if they've made 300 or 400 or 500 for us, they're going to wait till they get the over 1,000 that we've asked for and ship them all at one time. They are coming, though. I know there's been a lot of talk of, are they coming? Are they not coming? They are coming. There is currently a wait list that we have started for patrons that know they want those e-readers. We have about 122 people on that wait list now. So if that is something you're interested in and waiting on, please get with your reader advisor and they'll get you on the list and notify you the moment they come in and we have them ready. NLS recently visited the library and did some training with us, did some inventory with us on the machines. We had a conference, an NLS conference locally in Daytona that I was able to attend. They are also recognizing that a lot of outreach needs to be done to reach more people in the community all over nationwide. So they are very much working on a national advertising campaign. Some of the things they're doing is using the search engines of Google and Bing for keywords so that things will come up and people will have the opportunity to click on those. Also, they're using digital ads on social media. So as people are surfing social media, they will get some of this information. And then they also are using LinkedIn and reaching out to the professionals that may come across people who could use our services. So they are doing a national campaign on this. We locally are doing some things ourselves. We have reached out to, we've identified each county in the state of Florida and we've kind of assigned the counties to different employees and they're reaching out to the ophthalmologist, the optometrist, and just sending them information in the mail to make sure they are aware of our services and are offering those. Also, of course, we have our outreach coordinator who is attending events as they come up and sharing our services as much as we can. It's in its infant stages, but they are testing it so that you could speak to Alexa and she can access Bard and play your books or list your wish list. So that's very exciting. Hopefully that will come in the future. That is just being field tested at this moment. Also, they are field testing a new talking book machine. I was able to get my hands on it at their conference recently. It looks somewhat similar to the machines we have now, but it's going to have some fabulous new functions. It will have Bluetooth, so if you use an earpiece or something, you wouldn't have to be attached to your player. You could move around. It will also have Wi-Fi, so it will have the ability to download books directly onto the player from Bard, or also take the cartridges that you can insert. So it's going to have a lot more features to it, and it is in the prototype stage. Like I said, I was able to mess with it a little bit, but they assured us it probably won't look exactly like that. They're just letting people use them right now and getting feedback on what needs to be changed. In the library, we are undergoing a really big change right now, and it's actually happening pretty quickly. So most of you may know in the past, you could get a book on a cartridge, and we had to store, say, one particular book. We had to store 10 cartridges on a shelf because we had to have 10 copies of that book, should someone ask. But now we're kind of moving into duplication on demand, and that has really taken off. And that allows us to take that same cartridge and put 10 books or 5 or whatever you request on one cartridge, as opposed to having to send you 10 in the mail. So that is a big switch over for us. It is logistically, obviously it changes our shelving and how much we need to keep on the shelves, but it also changes what our staff needs to do to get that stuff out to you. We are still kind of doing both right now. There's a lot of people still using the one book, one cartridge. If you are interested in volunteering, or if you know someone who needs volunteer hours or is interested in volunteering, we have fabulous opportunities at the Daytona Library. We would love to have you. We have a wonderful volunteer group there now that do anything from cleaning machines and getting boxes ready to answering our phones, putting labels on things. We have a lot of opportunities. So please reach out to us if you are interested in doing that. We just got 13 new books that the recording studio is going to be working on starting this next week. Friends of Library Access was kind enough to get those books to us very quickly. And so we got them this past week. There's 13 of them. They are the Sunshine State Young Reader Award books. And then some additional books that we've already recorded in the past. And now there's a new one in the series. So we're going to continue with those series. Director Doyle spoke about our shelving that we did get approval for in the last year's legislative request. And so we're going to be making some repairs to our shelves. Right now, the shelves that house our Braille books and our digital books are electronic. And so they move. And as you can imagine, with anything electronic, it has its flaws and its problems. We're requesting some legislative funds to kind of do a library refresh and an update of our library. We need to do some minor repairs in the warehouse of just, you know, the walls and ceilings and some things around the doors. But we also would like to kind of refresh the library and take a look at where our reader advisors are sitting and do they have the privacy and the space they need and kind of refresh the library a little bit. So that's something we're looking for in this next legislative request. I flew through that really fast. I hope we're doing, we're doing good on time. Any questions for the library or myself that I can answer? One in the back and one in the front.
Thank you for all the information. You mentioned earlier about e-readers. Could you just give us a description of what you mean by e-reader?
Yes, I noticed there are people in here with them. So she can probably describe it better because she uses it, but it's like I'm going to describe it as a little keyboard, but it's much smaller than a full-size keyboard, and it will have the Braille that pops up on it so you can read on the machine as opposed to having to have like a whole Braille book in front of you.
It explains it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, Nicole. My name is Deborah Kendrick, and I actually work for NLS. I'm part of the BARD, NLS BARD Tech, and I wanted to add to all of the wonderful things that you have shared that I think everyone's really going to love the Amazon Alexa skill when it's released because it's very, very nice. It's got a lot of features that we don't have in any other platform. Things like you can create bookshelves for your own, to meet your own taste. Like I have a classics bookshelf and a mystery bookshelf and a cookbook nice. Bookshelf and that's kind of cool stuff. But so I wanted to add that, and I wanted to mention too, if people want a detailed description of the e-reader, there's an article in the current issue of AFB Access World, which actually was written by me, called A Tale of Two E-Readers. And it's pretty much describes both of them and how they work. And I don't know which one Florida is going to get yet, but I just want to go on the record saying that as part of the team, I have been begging to get Florida moved up the queue, but what you said is exactly right. We're going to be the last state. I have a question for you that's kind of off the wall, but I'm fairly new to Florida, and as an author, I wrote a number of books for the American Foundation for the Blind when they had a publishing arm, and those books were never added to the NLS collection. And so I thought they were lost forever, but I recently found my own cassette copies, which were recorded by talking book narrators. And so I've been talking to people in Washington, and they're saying, well, the best thing would be if you could find an easy way to get those digitized, and then they could be uploaded for people to download it from BARD. So does the recording studio here in Daytona, does it have analog to digital capabilities?
You have stumped me.
It'd be so cool to have it done right here in Florida.
It would. And I have to say, I I wish I knew. I do not know the answer. I can't imagine that we don't have that, since we also obviously went from cassette and moved over to the cartridge. I just haven't seen it or know what that looks like. So I would have to check and get back to you.
How long have they been in existence? Again, you know, I haven't been in Florida all that long. Have they been in existence long enough that they might have been recording in the days of cassettes, that they would have cassettes that they did themselves?
I can look into it, and we can definitely try to recover some things. If we have that equipment available, we will definitely work with you on that.
Okay. Well, thank you. And I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
It's okay. It's okay. I'm learning every day.
So, okay. We do have one question on Zoom.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah, this is really, really interesting. But I do have a question regarding a book. I've been waiting for a book by an author for a very long time, and my library tells me that the book has a book number, but it hasn't been released to NLS yet, and I'm wondering why.
Well, I don't know specifically on that book. What I do know is that NLS on their website does have a link that if there is a particular book you are looking for or something that you need that you don't see that they have, you can request it there and someone will reach out to you. I don't know in that the particular book that you're talking about why they don't have it, or is it just not there yet, but they would be able to answer that if you put in a request for it.
Well, the weird thing is, like I said, there's a book number. So, I mean, if there's a book number, I don't see why it's not available. I mean, it's just weird. I've been waiting for like months on this, like since, I don't know, maybe January. And my, you know, my local librarian says, and I do trust her. She's excellent. She says, you know, when it comes in, we'll email you and tell you. And I don't want to be a pest, but I'm like calling once a month saying, hey, is this book available yet? Because I'm not seeing it on BARD or anything.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it on BARD or anything. So I'm just, I don't know. It's really weird.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. It's a new book by Michael Cohen. And, you know, I thought it would be out because the book is over a year and a half old already.
Right. I understand. I don't know. We could look into it and ask NLS and try to find out if it has a number assigned by them. I understand what you're saying. It makes sense that it should be out, but I don't know if there's some reason or delay in putting it on the website or if they just don't have access to it yet. I could get the information and try to find out for you.
I would appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Of course.
Yeah, this is Katie Frederick. Sometimes I know from talking to others working at NLS that sometimes within the process, what happens is they get the books, they work on them, and then they get a book number, but maybe they're doing some final editing on the book or something. Maybe they had to go back and redo it, or, you know, something happens. So it could just be that it's taking longer than usual for the book to actually get into the catalog is my guess. It's probably going through some more editing, or maybe they had to, you know, redo something from a technical perspective.
Director Doyle and our new director of the library, Nicole Sanderson, you guys give them a great big round of applause.